People make things awkward. They don't understand things have a beginning and an end. It's a chapter, not a book, you know? It's like,
Right.
move on. We had a great time together for a while, and then we mutually agreed that we weren't anymore. We don't have to
But
make a
that's the
big deal
problem
out of
is
it,
that
you know?
that's the problem is that most people don't mutually agree that something is over. Like
It's a
that's just
shame.
well, and I think it just go I think it just boils down to this whole like the best way that I know how to put it is that it might be over for one person, but it's not over for the other. But that doesn't matter. If it's over for one person, it's over.
That's
Like,
right.
and unfortunately, we've gotten accustomed to this whole idea that, well, if we just keep fighting for it, and sometimes if it's over, it's over, and that's all you can do about it.
Right. It
And
doesn't
there's
devalue you as a person, it devalues you as a unit, you know?
I mean it's something that's a real struggle.
It is time now for something positive.
We might be headed to the promised land
of speaking the truth
and finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
Problem can only be solved when there is a kind of coalition of conscience. Of conscience.
Because that is how it works.
This is the beginning, it is not the finale, and that's why we're here, and that's why we rally, 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 rally.
We've got to be that creative minority. Creative minority. Creative minority.
Find a way to get in the way. I got in trouble. It was good trouble. It was necessary trouble.
Frankly, I know we've got to do something. Do something. Do something.
All right. Hello and welcome to another episode of Public Access America. My name is Jason. His name is Jeffrey. And we get together at the end of every week to kind of wrap up the week. We have a great topic. We have some great topics. We have a great note full of stuff. But we also have a co-host named Jeffrey. And I'm kind of curious, what is there a story, an event, something that happened this week that's top on your mind?
Oh, man. The one that I think the only thing that's really still kind of at the center of my mind is this whole FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago.
Okay. I have an update. So I asked you in Sunday's show, is Merrick Garland Trump's political rival because Trump was the reason that Merrick Garland didn't get on the Supreme Court? And I agreed with you that no, they are not political rivals, but I heard the story is that because Trump removed Garland from the list and added somebody else, that's the reason that Garland should have a beef with Donald Trump because he didn't get on the Supreme Court. So that's where that tangent went. Did you have it? Is there any tangents that you wanted to wrap up on about this story?
I think with that one, I mean, Trump isn't the reason like that Merrick Garland got removed from the list. Let's be real honest about that. The fact that you ended up with a conservative House, a conservative Senate, and a conservative president. I mean, I'm using that term very loosely at this point.
Right.
You were never going to have Merrick Garland be their choice. That was always going to be the reality. And the moment Mitch McConnell decided that, they weren't going to move forward with Merrick Garland as a replacement for the previous justice, that it was just it was we all knew what was going to happen.
I agree. Okay.
So I don't the issue isn't I don't think the issue is it has anything to do with political rivalries at this point.
I don't think so
I think
either.
It is I think it's being played up as such. Whether or not that's a being whether or not that's very effective right now. There's kind of some different measures out there on how effective that has been. The biggest issue at hand is I think, you're starting to see more and more conservative outlets are just tired of Trump.
I agree.
But, they still have to pander to that party line. They still have to kind of try and get the base fired up. Yeah. But this one, I think this one is really going to test, the metal of the actual Republican politicians about whether or not, It just really heavily depends on what's in these documents that they found.
Agreed.
And I think that's always been the problem. You know, there are really two pathways forward in this. I've watched a few things. Everything from, you know, if Trump doesn't indict, it's an indictment on our democracy. To
sure,
you know, Merrick Garland just used the tools that he had on hand in order to get a bunch of documents back that belonged to NARA.
Agreed.
And that, you know, he's not going to prosecute because there might not be anything to prosecute.
What is there to prosecute? Yeah, he had the documents. That's a crime, right? We can agree mm-hmm. with that. But it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's a minor crime.
Depending on what's in the documents.
Yeah, depending what's in the documents and the intent. So if there was mm-hmm. phone records, say, or emails, or other people in those rooms that they find in video cameras, you know, exchanging money for documents, then there's a real case. But other than that, I think legitimately there could just be work of a plea deal, and I think that's what the country would rather have. Let's keep things like, moving, but let's get a plea deal that says you're not going to run for office anymore because you're just not fit, you know. And I think
that's not going to happen.
That's a compromise I think that we might end up seeing.
Nope. Yeah. We are not going to see that. Like,
good, then it's going to be a fight.
It's either going to be they're going to charge him with a crime,
right?
Or they are going to just say, look, we asked you to give us these documents back.
They did.
And we had to get them back.
Yep,
and
they did.
After that, we're just not going to pursue, you know, a case against this.
Right.
And like I said, it so heavily depends on what's in those documents. I don't think you're going to see any sort of attempt to try and get him to plead to a lesser crime or anything like that. I think that honestly would
depending on what they
worse.
Have.
I think it would be far worse.
Yeah.
Than if they just full out charge him on, you know, if he has these, you know, materials that would qualify under the Espionage Act.
Right. What he intended to do with that. If there was intent to distribute, then they could get him on a crime, and then they could get him to plea to a lesser crime, maybe. But that all depends on that, you know?
It all depends on that. But then, you know, if you go with obstruction of justice, one of the things that, you know, it's a slap on the wrist, and realistically,
right.
You know, because if there's nothing in these documents that you would qualify as criminal handling of government property,
right.
I mean, technically, is it criminal handling of government property? Yeah, sure. It's, you know, all this information is supposed to be turned over to NARA.
Depending on precedent, it wasn't at the time of Hillary Clinton, you know what I mean? But then there's the law that Donald Trump signed into law. So it, you know.
Right.
And also, so, I had said that there was only one confidential email in Hillary's emails, and it turns out there was actually 7 email chains that had various degrees of top secret. So I was wrong on that, you know what I mean? And I appreciate people giving me information in a rational way so that I can research it and come up with these corrections and let people know. And it's so, Donald, you know, it's not apples and oranges there. You know, she wasn't the president. She didn't have physical copies, and both of them were hiding it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is, you know, I'm not going to play what about. I think it was wrong when Hillary did it, and I thought she should have been charged for it.
In a search for precedent, that's where I'm trying to lean to. It's that or Nixon, and nobody remembers Nixon. So I'm trying to get somebody relevant. Bill Clinton got a blowjob and then tried to hide it. You know what I mean? it's similar to that.
Remember when that was like what we called the fault of America's democracy was the president getting a fucking blowy?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, there's a, you know, it's abuse of power, period, end of story. And, you know, you've got, of course, all these different power struggles that women have to go through. And it's wrong.
Agreed.
But nobody thought for a moment that a blowjob was going to topple America's democracy.
Right. But imagine Bill Clinton just saying, I'm in an open relationship with my wife and I have extramarital relations. Oh, he's in an open relationship. Like in 2024, that could fly. You know what I mean?
Right.
I wasn't cheating on my wife. I was just in a polyamorous relationship with a significant other.
or ethically non-monogamous. I mean,
right.
But even still, like, even amongst those communities, we, you know, there's still the recognition, you know, that we see in not, you know, in power dynamics, you
of
know,
course. It,
there's the, you know, you always have that question of, can you really consent if someone's your boss?
Right. Oh, agreed.
And that's, and I think that's where most of us end up is like, we're not really sure that there is great consent practices if, you know, you're up and, you know, if you're having to try and keep your job. So that too, it's kind of why, like I've always been a person where it's like, I don't date coworkers for that very reason.
You know, sure.
It's just the idea to me of, you know, somebody being uncomfortable showing up to work. If things don't work out, just doesn't, it just doesn't feel good to me.
When things don't work out, right.
So it's always one of those things where it's like, It's like, you know, is it unfortunate? Yeah. But I think it's a lot more unfortunate if things don't work out. And then now you have this awkward workspace because,
people, you know, make things awkward.
Whatever.
They don't understand things have a beginning and an end. It's a chapter, not a book, you know? It's like,
right.
Move on. We had a great time together for a while, and then we mutually agreed that we weren't anymore. We don't have to make
a big deal.
That's
the problem is that,
you know?
That's the problem is that most people don't mutually agree that something is over. Like,
that's a shame.
And I think it just boils down to this whole, like, you know, the best way that I know how to put it is that it might be over for one person, but it's not over for the other. But that doesn't matter. If it's over for one person, it's over.
Like, that's right.
And unfortunately, you know, we've gotten accustomed to this whole idea that, well, if we just keep fighting for it, and, you know, Sometimes if it's over, it's over. And that's all you can do about it.
Right.
And,
it doesn't devalue you as a person. It devalues you as a unit, you know?
and it's something that's a real struggle because, you know, what do you do with all of these feelings, emotions, and time that, you know, is now suddenly it's done and it's over, you know, especially if those feelings for you are still present.
Sure.
Like, that's always the rough part is that when you still have those feelings and you're standing there with nothing left, you know, of that, it's rough.
Yeah.
But, you know, that unfortunately, you know, there's not much you can do about that.
It always reminds me, what I do is I write a lot. Holy cow, I'll have a note about the end of a relationship after it's over, and I'll try and like justify it and rationalize it and all that. But in that, what I feel like it's like an addiction worth, a withdrawal from an addiction worth having. Like, it's the only withdrawal that I think is worth having is that relationship, because the harder the withdrawal is, the better that relationship was, the better that chapter in your life is. And so, but no, what I try and do is I try and convert things into things that make me feel better about it. You know what I mean? And so the harder I fall, the better I feel it was, and it was worth the withdrawal of it. It sucks, you know, but in the end,
I see what you're going for there.
Were you going to choose not to do it to avoid that? I'd rather feel the pain and have that joy than never have either one.
I see what you're going with there. Yeah. I mean, I can definitely understand that.
Cool.
You know, and unfortunately, it's like, you never really know what to do. I think this is where, you know, one of the things that I've always struggled with about myself is that there are some relationships that even though they've been over for 10 plus years, like,
still,
I still love that person.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And I know that I still love that person. And, you know, nobody told me or taught me what to do with that, or if that was normal or anything like that.
Right.
We've like suddenly really moved on from what we were talking about.
Nobody,
but this is fun.
Nobody's ever taught us how to deal with that. You know, I was on that Bottled Up Bitches and we were talking about something and I was like, oh, what ruined me was I was watching porn and I looked up the porn star and found out she had been dead for 10 years. And when we think about those relationships, we want to remember those people as that porn star, but they've evolved and grown. Some passed away, so they're never the same. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. But the want, sometimes I just like, oh, I miss them so much because I just want to feel like something, you know, because I don't care and I want to feel something.
Oh, that's also a tough one too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, I can't say that I, you know, I can say that I've had those fleeting moments where I feel exactly that.
Right.
But the worst, you know, I think the worst one for me is like, you know, there are certain relationships where I sit there and I go, I really did love that person, and I royally fucked that up. Everyone. I really did love that person, and you know, we go through that stage of maybe if I tried harder, if I did X, Y, and Z more, if I did all of these other things, and you know, realistically, there's no possible way. You know, something that you know I have had to learn is, you know, just because you have those feelings, that doesn't mean that if you try harder, that somebody's going to have those feelings in return.
And, right.
You know, it's a product of, you know, we're taught that you just didn't work hard enough. You didn't do all of these things.
Yeah.
And realistically, you know, we all have to sit down and reconcile with the fact that we gave our best at the time, and our best either A wasn't enough or B wasn't for that other person. And you have to accept that. Like there is no other way to put that, you know?
That's true. I've break most things off because I wasn't the right person for the other person, and no one was calling it. You know what I mean? But it was easily established.
And that's the tough part is that, you know, like, especially, you know, especially for me, where it's like, I have, you know, found myself deeply in love with people, and that feeling has never gone away. It's like, is that normal? Are there people out there that even after they break up with someone, they're still in love with a person?
Heck yeah. Yeah. Because there's degrees of love, isn't there? You can be in love with somebody, or you can generally love them. You know what I mean? Like when I think of Devi, I think I love them. I'm not in love with them. You know what I mean? So there's a difference there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, we end up talking about is that, you know, love someone as a person, like absolutely, like, you know, everything about them, you know, everything about a person might be great, wonderful, fantastic, but in terms of like, is this a person that I want to spend every day of my life with, you might go, no.
Right. How do you
like they're a person I want to talk to every day, absolutely, but you know, I might not be someone who wants them in my life. Yeah. Or the other side of it for me is that, you know, it's like, you know, you sit down and you go, what would my life have looked like if, you know, I was still with this person, because I still love them. And like, you know, that whole, if that person, you know, were to show up today and say, I'm still in love with you, you have that genuine, I don't know what I would do with that, because I still feel the same. Is that normal?
Right. The person that you knew 10 years ago walked up to you today, or the person that had grown the past 10 years?
That's the one thing that you can never fully fucking reconcile, because some people change over 10 years. Some people change over a year. Some people never change.
That's right. That's why I consider people just that. My analogy is just that they're planets in the universe. They have their own orbit, and they'll come back around. Sometimes we align with Mars. Sometimes we don't. You know what I mean? Sometimes we align with Venus. But if you keep good people in your thoughts, good people will orbit you now and again. I mean, there's comets. They come back once in a while. There's planets that come back every year. There's stars that we can see from afar, you know? And just putting it all into perspective and knowing that the amazing thing is that you feel that. Like, you feel that love for your life, not just, you can feel it. You care. You're a human, and that is so cool to be able to just have. And some people collect the negatives from a relationship. Some people eliminate those and collect the positives and the memory degradation, categorizing, you know, itemizing. And I always try and remember the good things, and I just try not to remember the bad. Although there's times of depression when the bad just is pretty much there. And then I put things in perspective, you know?
Right. Sometimes that's all there is in a relationship. Yeah. It is just bad. And I've got plenty of those under my belt too. And, you know, as a kid, you sit down and you blame everybody else, you know, you blame them for all of the things that went wrong. And it's like, it wasn't me, it was them. And then Sometimes it is. And, you know, sometimes, you know, objectively, you kind of start sitting down and going, wow, I fucked that up. Wow, I fucked that up. Wow, I fucked that up.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, no wonder they weren't happy with me. I fucked up a lot of stuff.
Right.
And I've had to reconcile a lot of that with myself, too, yeah. As I've gotten older, is that, you know, some of the anger that I've harbored and some of the hurt feelings that I've harbored, turns out, you know, that there's a good chunk of it that was my responsibility, and yeah. it was my responsibility to take that on and my responsibility to deal with that. But there's also some relationships too, where it's like, well, yeah, I guess fuck that person because they did some really awful stuff and there's no coming back from that. I will own my mistakes and right. my problems, my issues, but I will not, you know, I will not say that, you know, the vast majority of failings or the major failings were mine.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, dishonesty, you know, somebody not being honest with you, that's not your fault.
Right. No one's on a high horse when a relationship ends, you know. But no. Here's the thing. You couldn't change them. You shouldn't change them. You don't want to change mm-hmm. them. You want to find somebody that doesn't have to change for you, right? Like somebody that will evolve with you, maybe in separate directions, maybe in the same direction, but you're always twisting because you come back together to talk about your experiences and then go and come, and that's a relationship. But sometimes people aren't like that, you know what I mean? Some people are just not for our daily lives, and so that's not a knock on them. They're an amazing person. They are the top of the line Galaxy phone, but I'm an iPhone guy, you know what I mean?
Right, you know, and that's, I think, one of the biggest issues is that mm-hmm. nobody ever really sat down and explained all of this stuff to us and that's what right. this really looked like.
Right, nobody knew. There was so much possession involved in relationships that nobody knew there didn't have to be until just recently, you know?
Right. You know, you had this whole, you know, this woman is my property. And then uh-huh. suddenly it's like, wait, we can do this for love. And then, oh, wait, you know, this is a partnership. And then, oh, wait, yeah. you know, sometimes these things only work out for so long. And,
yep.
you know, it's. The biggest problem for someone like me is that when something doesn't work out, I see it as a referendum on me. And that's something that I've been working on.
Well, you do have to do a final analysis on your areas that needed improvement, right? But
the problem that I always had was that I couldn't objectively sit down and say, you know what, these were my failings.
Yeah.
These are the things that I own that I didn't do
yeah.
or I did do. And, you know, these are things that, you know, I will take into the future
mm-hmm.
and learn from. You know, it was either, you know, fuck this person and all their crazy bullshit, or man, right. I royally fucked everything up. And, you know, it was like 100, like I didn't realize that you could, you know, you it was a sliding scale. You didn't have yeah. to go 100 this way or 100 that way. Like it was,
yeah.
you know, genuinely, you know, 60% of it might have been my fault, and well, fuck, that sucks. Or, you know, maybe only 10% of it was my fault, and that also sucks. But it's like, well, you know, don't let the rest of that be a referendum on you. You know, you yeah. can't control another person's actions.
That's or right. feelings
or anything else.
If you fall in love with a tornado for 2 days, you shouldn't be mad at yourself that you tried the tornado. You know, but if you're gonna fucking hang on to that shit for a year, you better be a boat. You know.
Boat, fuck, you better be a kite
because
you're going to be riding into a tornado.
I was married to a tornado, and you just had to go with that ride and do what you could at the moment to like kind of divert it from the fucking populations, you know. But I've also oh, yeah. been in the other relationships where what I feel is I read the tea leaves in the way that I want to read them in the relationship, and then I'm embarrassed at the way I read them a year later. You know, like they weren't giving me the signs I thought they were giving me. I wanted to see the signs they were giving me. So I'm really sorry for that, ladies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's always the tough part is that, you know, we all sit down and, you know, God, there's been a couple of them where it's like, you know, oh man, this relationship would have been great. But, you know, it turns out like,
yeah,
looking back, I'm like, you know what? That relationship was great for the time that we had it. And that was all that there was to it.
That's
there wasn't,
right.
there wasn't going to be anything more, you know, it was just, we had a great time. we sought mutual comfort in each other, doing certain things in order to, you know, just, you know, be humans.
Don't make a comet a planet, you know, don't make a planet a moon,
you know? And so it, you know, there's been a couple of those, but then, there's still a couple of them out there where I'm like, I royally fucked that up. And you know, I wish I would have had a clearer head.
Me, you know, too. There is two or three people out there that could knock on my door and I would be back in love in an instant. Yeah.
You know, and that's always the worst part is you know, sitting there with your mistakes. Nobody ever taught you. Nobody ever taught me how to sit there with my mistakes. It was just like, they're just like, you just own up to your mistakes. It's like, okay.
Or kill yourself with them the rest of your life. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, that's been me is, you know, I'm the one that's like just raking myself over the coals because of my mistakes.
And good.
That's what, and that's the thing is that, you know, there is an appropriate level of, wow, I fucked that up. I guess I need to take this lesson, you know, and sit here uncomfortably with it for a hot minute. And,
you can put Jeffrey on the coals, but at some point he's medium rare. You got to take him off.
Right, and that's just exactly it, you know.
I like that.
The problem was is that I tried to go to the point where I was well done and had to be eaten with ketchup.
Right. And I want to remind any of the ladies listening that, yes, there is two or three of you that if you knocked on my door, I would be back in love. But I am still me. And that was the issue to begin with. I'm better now, but I'm still at my core, Jason. If you like that, then come knocking on my door. So, hard segue. No doubt there's drought, Jeffrey.
Yeah, it's a little dry out there.
Yeah.
In some places.
What's going on in Arizona, California, Nevada, the lower end of the table? Arizona says they want to create a desalinization plant in Mexico and then make viaducts to get the water there. And that was your idea back in 2022.
Well, the thing is that it's not my idea. It's something that is currently being done, and I think it would solve a lot of problems.
It's an idea that you brought to the table.
It's an idea that I brought to the table as a solution for the U.S. You know, it's something that needs to be done and considered. Mm-hmm. Like, it is not reasonable to sit down and go, oh, my God, what are we going to do? How are we going to get all these people fresh drinking water? How are we going to, you know, keep our crops going and, you know, go, okay, well, we can desalinate ocean water. You know, we're worried about the ocean levels rising. Well, there's a bunch of fucking water right there. We just got to get the fucking salt out of it.
Right. We can create new lakes. We can create new rivers. We can create new dams. We can create all sorts of infrastructure.
Well, I wouldn't say we should do that. Mm-hmm. What I would say is that we have rivers, lakes, and streams and reservoirs that are readily available that need water. The question is, how do we get it there?
Can we tie it into the Rio Grande and just create a water border and maybe put some crocodiles and snakes in there?
The problem is that there's a bunch of people already drowning in the Rio Grande and got one side just sitting there watching and the other side, they're like, well, guess we're just going to keep sending people over.
Sometimes I like to take a Trump lunacy and put it in modern day just to see if it's rational. Like, at some point, did a moat with alligators seem reasonable? And was he ahead of his time or was he just batshit crazy?
Moat with laser sharks.
Yeah.
You know, we just go straight up Dr. Evil. But so the thing about having all of these, you know, having desalinization plans, like, you would genuinely, I believe you would genuinely have to create infrastructure in order to get water to where you needed it to be.
Definitely.
Because you're going to need a series of places, reservoirs where water gets stored. You're going to need a series of reservoirs.
That's America.
No, you're going to need a series of lift stations and piping to get this water where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
And what that also means is that you're going to need a series of power generation systems that are dedicated to this.
Hell yeah.
Which, in which case, you know, like I was, like we were talking about, you know, these new little fucking box nuclear reactors seem to be the trick.
Right.
Like you can legitimately spread this out and, you know, you know, to me, it makes a lot of sense to seriously consider.
I love
you know, the thing about it is that, you know, you're going to have a bunch of fights about, well, this isn't natural. Okay, well, you're sitting here complaining about a bunch of species dying out because of a drought. Yeah, it's not natural. But if your option is, you know, water that saves not only just, you know, these river species potentially, but also, you know, keeps people from, you know, this is, having other issues themselves.
This is,
you
know, natural. There was a Dust Bowl at one time. Mm-hmm. Like, this is very real. This is something that can happen every 100, 200 years. We got to think about that.
Right.
And this is setting up for the future. In if you're going to create a desalinization infrastructure system with viaducts and electrical grids that go with that, that is going to put U.S. and Mexican people to work creating a soft border that people aren't going to want to cross because there's jobs on both sides. And that fits my no border scenario. So I see this as a win-win.
It's always going to be a win. Anytime anytime that you can create power, anytime that you can create water, anytime that you can create infrastructure that solves a series of issues that people have, great. Like, don't get me wrong. There's some things that you're not going to be able to necessarily turn the desert itself into a place where you grow food automatically. It's going to, you know, you look at people who have, you know, stopped the encroachment of a desert by planting trees, and it takes time. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of energy. It takes, but that's not to say that you couldn't put a greenhouse in the middle of the desert suddenly, because now you have the ability to take a small section and turn it subtropical and grow foods that you haven't been able to grow in certain areas.
Imagine the communities, industrial, residential, that build up along those viaducts, reservoirs, and power systems that were being created. And that's going to create an economy on the Mexican side that's going to benefit us. The thing is what we do has to lift somebody else up as well. Otherwise, it's going to bring other people down. So if we could work with Mexico to create this, I think that's amazing. I don't want Arizona to be like, that's ours. We bought the land. We incorporate it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a real way to make this nice, real cool.
Well, I think there's a couple of expectations that we need to put in place first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Number one, I don't know what it's going to look like in terms of, you know, whether or not Mexico would get nuclear reactors the way that, you know, the United States could get nuclear reactors. That that is a whole level of discussions that I don't know that we could necessarily solve.
We can't give it to Saudi Arabia. We shouldn't give it to Mexico, right?
Right, or if we couldn't give it to Africa, you know, for example, in places that have been drought stricken, like Ethiopia and Eritrea, you know, that have struggled with famine for a long time, despite the fact that, you know, they live fairly fucking close to water sources.
Well, nobody intelligent ever wanted to go over there and say what would grow in this. And then they found this amazing wheat that's like withstands everything, that became the genetic model for all of the wheat going forward. So Africa is like, the way that it's evolving, I think it's really cool, and it's a new audience for us. So yay, Africa.
Well, so here's where we also have to put in some of our own expectations. Number one is that what is going to work with nuclear power in the short term, we need to figure out how to make it renewable and sustainable in the long term.
Oh yeah.
You know, we can't sit down and fully rely on this idea that, you know, we're going to have endless radioactive supplies.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's not a realistic expectation. However, what we do have is a source of sunlight that is constant. The question is how do you create enough power using small enough space in order to desalinate ocean water in order to get it to these places where, you know, nuclear is probably never going to be on the table. I mean, let's be real honest. The idea that Ethiopia or Eritrea is going to have nuclear reactors available to them is
no.
You know, you're never going to see that happen.
That's just devastation. But somewhere like Ukraine has a big nuclear plant that powers a lot of different countries in a lot of different ways. And so there's solutions everywhere, I think.
There are solutions. And I think what that means is that, you know, if there is a way that people can come up with better ideas on how to generate that power, mm-hmm. how to store that power, how to make it so that way you can get that water, desalinated and move it inland, you know, you're going to see a lot of demand for that. Mm-hmm. And this is where, you know, you're going to have to put to bed some geopolitical issues, because if you're in the middle of a fucking continent and you're having a problem with another country that, you know, has a pipeline to water, I'm not saying that you need to, you know, make nice with dictators, but what I am saying is that, you know, there's going to have to be some level of acceptable body that says, you know, look, you know, water is a human right, as it should be. And how we get water to all these places that are underserved is a great question that is going to need to be answered.
And I agree with that. How do we keep water in the hands of the people and not corporations? Because I remember George Bush towards the end of right after his presidency invested, like we found out he had bought the rights to land in fresh water all over the world. And I thought that was concerning back then, you know, and now water's even at a premium more. But we need to build the infrastructure that benefits everybody and get it to everybody. You know, we need to make it like a standard, like a river, you know what I mean?
And that's where something, you know, that's where these things are really tough, because, you know, water rights are and continue to be like a major struggle.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
in like conservative states, in that conservative area, farmers are conservative. In Arizona, if you're eating lettuce in the winter, it comes from Arizona, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're drinking
California, Arizona,
yep. If you're drinking wine from California, you know, it's like this cotton. That's what these people produce. That's our clothes, people, you know, and they're fighting over water with golf courses, you know.
So it's certainly going to be a fight. But I think that if there are ways that we can create multiple desalinization paths, multiple, you know, like, I'm not saying it's going to solve the flooding, you know, of rising oceans.
All right.
But what I am saying is that, you know, if we're concerned about where we're going to get water, we shouldn't be as concerned, because we have a steady source. We just have to make it usable.
That's right. But I think from England's droughts to Germany's drought, Germany's flood, holy cow, China's droughts, all of the, our droughts, like all over the fires in places there hasn't ever been fires, you know, fires in our, I think we can agree that like global warming is here. Like climate change, you can still pander with the existence of, but right now it seems like it's here. I call it climate change, but right in this moment, we can call it global warming, you know?
Right. And I was looking at, the hydrologic outlook for Washington. It's going to be another La Nina year for, you know, and what we're looking at is going to be another wet winter, you know, mountains that potentially will have record snowpacks again, you know, which great for us. Like, you know, we're not going to have water issues necessarily. Like we've been considered out of our drought. Granted, this summer's been pretty dry, but if we get another record snowfall year, that's, you know, we're not going to necessarily have a whole hell of a lot to worry about.
Right.
You know, but that doesn't mean that, you know, other places like, you know, Central Valley, California, where they're fucking hurting.
Yeah. Death Valley is like, anyway, it's bad. It's bad. And California they're predicting that it's about to have a record flood of 8 feet or more, you know, and it's going to turn part of California into an inlet sea. So, I mean, the twists, and we all know in Kentucky what happened with the floods. People died, you know. Joe Biden had to go there because Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul couldn't. By the way, everybody, there's a real chance, this isn't where I'm going with, this isn't a tangent, this is just a mention. Charles Booker is running against Rand Paul in Kentucky for to be the senator, and nobody, I don't think anybody had that like card in their Senate change race, but oh God, could we? You know? The people of Kentucky really like Charles Booker. He was marching with Black Lives Matter, running against Amy McGrath when Amy McGrath hid from the Black Lives Matter. And so people, and he's like a school teacher that decided to run because there, so he's a really good guy, Charles Booker. You could do worse, you know. and you have it in Rand Paul, you know. So okay, so drought, I think drought is real, and if I think Republicans are starting to get on board as corporations begin to get on board too, but I don't think they are on board in a real serious way yet.
I don't think they're on board in a real serious way yet because they're not looking at ways to address the issue. You know, like, you could seriously sit down and say, oh yeah, no, here's the way to address it. You know, nuclear powered desalinization plants that are to, you know, the infrastructure that you'll need, it will pipe water inland to all these different places that serve all these different, you know. And that's the other thing is some of the stuff that people are going to have to keep in mind is that, you know, this water, you know, is going to be, you know, it's going to evaporate, it's going to go into the air, it's going to help in terms of how much moisture is in the air, it's going to help cloud production, it's going to,
the trees like, that are going to be growing around it.
So I mean, there are things that it can do,
right?
And you know,
we stopped imagining, that's the problem. But at one point somebody was like, we should make a Hoover Dam, and then they did that shit. America has been riding on the advancements we made 100 years ago, and we really should start making advancements now so that we can ride on those for the next 100 years.
Well, the problem has been, it hasn't just been that we stopped imagining, it's that we've started looking at what has been done and go, nope, we need to undo that. Nope, we need to undo that. Nope, we need to undo that. And don't get me wrong, like, you know, is there a problem, you know, for native fish populations whenever you create a dam like that? Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. But if you're creating a self-contained water infrastructure that starts at desalinization and goes to local communities, then you're not killing the native population. You're building an infrastructure that never had it to begin with and creating a new ability for a species to exist.
Well, you're creating the ability for existing species to survive, is what I would say.
Okay.
And one of the things that everybody's going to have to keep in mind with something like this is that as inland places dry historically, people then move to major cities.
Oh yeah.
And if those inland places don't have water, those major cities aren't going to have water either.
That's right.
Water flows downhill.
That was my thought when you said that you weren't going to be facing a drought. I was like, well, we just now found the new southern border of livability, right? Like Washington State is going to be the only livable part of the United States, the northern region there.
Well, what you've ended up having is over the course of several different droughts, you know, for example, there was growing up in Montana, you always heard this whole, well, with California facing a drought, they're talking about trying to pipe water from Montana.
Yeah.
And I looked at that and I went, that's fucking dumb.
They talked about that again too.
Well, and that's where it's like, why are you trying to pipe water from a place that already struggles with having access to water when you can literally create access to water and have it available reliably? That's your biggest issue.
Get your own.
Your biggest issue that you're going to have to solve for is, what are you going to do with the salt?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's literally it. And even then, there are probably things that you could do with that salt that you probably haven't really thought about. For example, down in Arizona, what they do with how they create you know, renewable power plants down there is they use molten salt.
Nice.
They use solar towers to collect and heat that molten salt, and that molten salt, you know, heats up water and turns generators. Imagine setting up a bunch of those, you know, in desert areas where you can literally get,
I like that.
You know, this isn't going to be like your high quality salt that you want to eat. This is literally going to be shit that you're like, well, if this works out and we can, you know, sell a bunch of this and create a bunch of, you know, solar collectors, in places around the world where it's sunny and desert. Yeah. Great.
You know what else?
You could literally turn the Sahara into a fucking power generation.
Wouldn't it be beautiful? And the other part is, you know, when there's lower levels of salt in the ocean, jellyfish are born. But more salt, it kind of kills off some of the jellyfish because they're an invasive species. And so that would actually bring some of our sea life back. I like the idea of that. But drought is real, man. Drought is real, and most people in the world are feeling it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just happen to live on the Gulf Coast, so I don't notice it yet.
Well, and that's just it, is that, you know, places where you're getting consistent storms, you're not going to notice it. Places where you're not getting any fucking rain. Like, you know, don't get me wrong, you guys get slammed with hurricanes all the time. California doesn't get that. That's true.
Oh my God, yeah. Hurricanes suck so bad.
Wow. Which, I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like this hurricane season's been a lot quieter than some of the ones of the past.
Yeah, the first one is just predicted for Mexico and parts of Texas. That's my problem. Poor Texas. What the fuck, Texas? It's almost like God is telling them their governor sucks this hard. They're going through a drought and a hurricane just after going through a loss of a power grid, you know, just going through a drought. Just so, geez, you know what I mean? I feel bad for Texas.
So I was like, I was sitting here going, you know, I haven't heard really a whole hell of a lot on hurricanes this year. So
I moved to Florida, so you won't hear much about them again.
I mean, even generally in the news, like, you haven't heard a whole hell of a lot about it. Like, it's like, maybe it's just been really quiet this year.
It has been really quiet this year, which I appreciate, but they're coming. They come later in the year. So,
that's the case. What's
really cool about the hurricane coming to Texas is that Greg Abbott, in a good deed for migrants, is busing them out of harm's way to New York. New York has received over 6,000 immigrants, 1,000 children, and they're offering them mental health and medical services. They're enrolling the children in school, and they're asking Greg Abbott to maybe prioritize the children because school year is starting, and they want to get them in as soon as possible. And I bring that up to say that, guess what? It's not Greg Abbott's America. You know what I mean? It's not his view of America. You can send the immigrants to places that call themselves sanctuary cities. That's why they call them sanctuary cities. And we need those workers. So it's amazing how New York is handling this and how petty Greg Abbott looks in the process.
Well, and this is, like I said, this is what always got me, is the fact that, you know, the idea that the immigrants that are coming into the country aren't conservative politically is a weird flex, because like, I don't know too many, you know, fresh across the border immigrants that are like diehard liberal, unless they're from Europe.
They just want to live their life, and they're not anything, honestly. No. But the truth is the cattle ranchers, the farmers, the food processing plants in Florida, having the people that would be filling those jobs, picking the cabbage, processing that chicken, gutting that cattle's being shipped to New York. Like, they can't get the cheap labor anymore, and our food prices go up. And I think that's something that needs to be noticed too, because Texas does a lot of that. And Greg Abbott's saying, no, you can't have the work you need. And I know that those people are conservative.
Oh, absolutely. Like, that's the thing you're losing out on potential conservative voters, because they're looking at, you know, they're looking at you, wow, these places don't fucking want us. Well, I guess, you know, if it's, you know, based on politics, then maybe I will vote liberal. Whereas if it was like, you know what, if you got conservative values, you want to work hard and make, you know, and just keep your head down and, we'll take it. Yeah. Texas would probably be, you know, even more of a conservative powerhouse.
I think that we've had a readjustment of party and we don't even realize it. I think what you're calling liberal is moderate. And I think progressive is now liberal. And I think on the other side is kind of the same way. You got the rhinos and then you got the MAGAs. And it's readjusted that way. I think a moderate Democrat locally concerned about the same issues you're concerned about is the same thing as a Republican that you don't know but you can trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I look at those centrists essentially, mm-hmm. and go, like, these are people that they agree on the issue, they disagree on the method of fixing the issue.
That's what I'm looking for in enough.
And that's official. That's it. It's like they see, yeah, mm-hmm. genuinely, okay, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
It's like, this is how I think we should solve it. This is how I think we should solve it.
Right. Mm.
Whereas, you know, the progressives, I wouldn't even call them the progressives. I would call them leftists.
Mm-hmm.
The leftists and the MAGAs are just screaming at each other.
That's right. That's right.
And neither of them they're not getting their way. And when they don't get their way fully, it's like, America has fallen. What has this country become?
Right.
And it's like, well, it's still the same built on, well, it's supposed to be the same built on compromise
mm-hmm.
country, because, you know, every other country, whether they have two political parties or 8, 10 are built on compromise. It's like, yeah. Hey, you know, these are how we think we should solve these issues. And then you got like 7 other voices that, you know, speak up. And they're like, well, okay, well, how do we come together to solve this one issue?
And one guy going, I don't wear a coat and I'm going to yell through everything you want to try and accomplish.
Yep.
Yeah. And the other side, the same thing. So that's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
I think people need to realize on both sides, if you're angry with the political system, it's your party that let you down. It's not the other party you need to attack. It's your party you need to fix. And that's Democrat or Republican. And mm-hmm. people are now talking about independence as a real force. And thank you, because 22% being Republican, 33% being Democrat, they're both minority parties. And they never will be a majority without the, 45% independent. So I registered as independent. But I originally registered as a Republican until Obama came. And then I voted for change in Obama. And then I voted against Trump. So
right.
that's my voting record.
That's been the tough part. Is like, you know, I started out as a Republican. I grew up in conservative areas. You know, typically in favor of less government involvement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched consistently as the government gets involved in shit and they fuck it up.
Yeah.
But the problem was, is that the Republican Party did not turn into the Republican Party of, you know, hey, let's balance this budget. Hey, let's talk about actually, you know, looking at how we spend our money and making sure that we're spending it responsibly. It was, we're not them. And I'm like, great, that doesn't fix anything.
That's right, yeah.
And because we've had we're not them for, you know, fucking the 25 years at this point.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's Republican or Democrat,
yeah,
it's
I guess we're not since them. Like Bush and Gore, right?
Because remember, you know, Clinton was the last time that we had we didn't run a fucking deficit.
Well, yeah, and Clinton was the one Democrat that realized he had to go to the right on criminal justice and immigration to get those conservative voters. But those don't happen anymore. Since Bush and Gore, it's like my side, your side, my side.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And so now it's just, you know, we watch as the government continues to spend a bunch of money that they don't have. We watch as, mm-hmm. you know, you have one party make a whole bunch of laws and then the other party go back through and undo all of it and then make their own laws and then it swings back. Nothing's getting fixed because it's my ideas, not, well, fuck, how do we make this work?
Right. I agree. I have two thoughts on that, but I do want to ask you, because somebody had mentioned Liz Cheney lost. Did you hear that Liz Cheney law? Can I say it again? Liz Cheney law. I'm switching through the channels right now. Liz Cheney lost. Anyway, everybody thinks that's a big deal. I want to remind everybody, every progressive on the left side, that Liz Cheney rode the Trump train through an impeachment, through to Trump tax things. She voted with him 93% of the time. Good riddance, I say. Go let her be a fucking philanthropist and fucking, you know, in her state. I don't really care what she does, but do you care? And if she had to join a party that could already be on the ticket, would you mind if she ran as a libertarian?
I think if Liz ran as a libertarian, you know, it would definitely be interesting. I don't think she's a libertarian.
Okay.
The thing is that I don't see her as the type of person who is actually strongly in favor of less government involvement, because let's remember, she voted with Trump 93% of the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff ended up being, you know, more government involvement. That's just the reality.
Right.
I think where people are, you know, saying, oh, good riddance to Liz, but they're not thinking about who the fuck Wyoming actually just voted in.
Right.
The issue at hand is that,
oh, I get that.
I may not necessarily be a Liz Cheney fan, but I do believe history will smile on Liz Cheney, much like history smiled on, you know, any number of people who stood up against tyrants at their time.
Yeah, I totally agree. The reality is that
I don't agree with Liz Cheney on her politics, mm-hmm. but I agree with Liz Cheney on where she drew her line in the sand, and that's
where I have a problem with
this
her.
This person is someone who does not value democracy, who does not accept when they lose, uh-huh. who does not accept when they are wrong, and was never going to bow out.
Agreed.
Just because this is something that we have to keep in mind.
I love who she's been since she got on the off ramp. I just think there was a few off ramps way before that she could have taken. So she's not getting like full saint credit from me. She's just a conservative in a fucking state with 580,000 people, you know.
let's be real honest. Conservatives like Mitt Romney, like Adam Kinzinger.
I like Adam
Kinzinger. Like Liz Cheney.
Yeah.
They voted with Trump's policies. Uh-huh. They did not necessarily like Trump's politics.
Right.
But the actual legal work and legislative work that came out of it was enough for them.
Right, because Trump was politics, he wasn't policy. There was people around him like Stephen Miller, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy that were creating the policy.
And that's one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that as far as the policy goes, you know, they were on board with the policy. They weren't on board with the politic.
Right.
And that's and at some point, you know, you have to look at this and go, do I agree with Liz Cheney on 100% of things? Hell no.
No.
Do I agree with Liz Cheney on the fact that Donald Trump was a threat to our democracy?
Agreed. Yeah. Totally.
And the reality is that all of the general legislative and all the general legislative legal lawmaking, mm-hmm. those things end up in the annals of history. You know, you look at, you will see there are minor things most of the time that we made a big deal out of that, you know, fade into nothingness.
Yeah.
But there are certain things that will never fade, and how people stood up to someone who refused to accept the fact that they lost an election.
Agreed.
How someone stood up to their own party to show that they were not going to bow down to someone who mm-hmm. just wanted power.
I agree. I would reelect her just based on what she did after the off-ramp. She's an American hero, and she'll go down in history as that. I have respect for her for that. And I just wonder what happened the first 4 years. You know, she was getting what she wanted, so she kind of turned. Anyway, I don't want to indict Liz Cheney. She's a great person. She did a great job. She's doing a great job. I would take her over Harriet Hagerman any day of the week. And I think what state is that? I had it in my head. Kansas? I think they're idiots. I think they're idiots for not keeping her in power. People said thank you, Wyoming. I think people cried because they couldn't vote for a Cheney for the first time in their lives. People in Wyoming actually were on TV crying, saying, I really wanted to vote for a Cheney, but what she's doing to the president is awful. And that's what I'm going to wrap up on that. A criminal's a criminal. Chase him down. You know, he already admitted he was a criminal. They said it's a crime to take the documents. He said, I have the documents. Anyway, can I wrap up or did you want to follow up? Okay. Thank you for listening to Public Access America. My name is Jason. His name is Jeffrey. And we covered a couple topics, but we got a few more coming up in our Thursday show. So come back, tune in, get down and get high. Get ready for the next episode. Na-da-da-da-da.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time.
To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do for your country.
My poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome to Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Apple
Podcasts. Stitcher. Smart Radio Public, and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America. History in the making. Making history in the making.